Hello and welcome to That's What She Said, the intersectional feminist podcast where we discuss current affairs and a badass woman from history. With me, Nina Ratridge.
And me, Hannah Thacker.
Hello, Hannah.
Hello.
We've seen each other recently. We're friends. We see each other.
So yeah, all the catching up has pretty much been done.
Yeah, we can get maybe even a ramble-free episode. That's a big promise.
That's not podcasting.
No.
Being professional people.
Unfamiliar with the concept.
Whatever that is. Yeah. Big
news.
We
have big news, everybody. Yeah. We're moving in together. It's official.
Finally.
This stage in every podcaster's relationship.
And possibly their demise.
Future episodes are just going to be like, and there's just this really big feminist issue of people not putting their forks back in the drawer.
Guys, can we discuss chore rotors, please?
I think big feminist issue. What do you think, Nina?
So much passive aggression.
Oh, I can't wait.
But I actually won't feel like that.
No,
at all.
I don't think it will. No. We kind of probably will enjoy it. Hannah did say to me before that she's really excited about making cleaning rotors.
So. I am thrilled. It's going to be colour coded, be stickers, possibly glitter.
Oh my goodness, glitter.
Yes, I know.
Well, got that to look forward to.
Right, so since there's no major things apart from that, which is
that is major.
Huge.
Let's not underplay that.
Yes, no other major things. Should we just crack on with some current news?
Yeah, this is what I mean about the not rambling. We've got all our chatting out of the way.
Look at us go.
Yep.
Wow.
Ready? Ready? Wait, who's going first?
Right. I think the first one I've got, we've both got, so yeah. Let's just dive in with that.
Okay, good chat.
Which is the awesome news that upskirting has been made illegal.
Oh, yeah.
No.
I don't know.
That was awful. So on a previous episode, you may recall that we spoke about the 26-year-old Gina Martin, who started a campaign against upskirting just 18 short months ago. And this was because she experienced a heinous act herself at a festival.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now been made illegal.
It's finally
a proper law.
It's finally a law, and this is all because of the work that she put in. It's just like one person bringing this to attention, and I think it was a Lib Dem MP that jumped on it and was like, yeah, obviously this should be illegal.
Do you have a quote from her?
I have a quote from her. Do you have a quote from her?
I also have a quote from her, but you go ahead.
Mine's in two parts, so I'll just do one of them.
Okay.
So she said, actually no, it's not, it's one part. Okay, so she said, 18 months ago I was upskirted at a music festival and I decided I wasn't going to brush it off. I was tired of ignoring it. I felt this was wrong and I was astounded to learn that upskirting wasn't a sexual offence. I wanted to change this for everyone, because the least we deserve is to be able to wear what we want without non-consensual photos being taken of us.
Exactly.
Pretty true.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty difficult to argue with.
Yep. Also, side note, did you know that upskirting has been illegal in Scotland since 2010?
2010, yeah.
I just discovered this. What the heck? Can we move to Scotland now?
I mean, there's plenty of reasons at the moment.
There is a ton.
I actually almost put an article in this episode about another reason Scottish women and Scottish people are brilliant, but
I mean they voted against Brexit for a start.
Yeah.
So yeah.
They're already fucking winning.
Do you think Scotland, will you accept us English gals, please?
Yeah. I'm closer to getting an Irish passport.
Passport?
An Irish passport. Now they will not have me, fucking hell.
Nope, they'll listen to this and that's it.
That wasn't even an attempt at an accent, it was just I can't speak. Oh dear. Yeah. Well, that's good news. I was really happy to see that. It was just like, what a good way to start the year. Thank
you,
Gina.
Yes.
There was a really nice picture of her cheersing some Prosecco with her lawyer that worked on the case with her.
Yeah.
And I was like, well done. Good work. She's good on the social media as well, Gina Martin.
All right, yeah. Give her a follow then.
I actually contacted her once and spoke to her.
All right.
I don't know if I said this last time, did I?
I don't think so.
No.
Keep this under your hat.
I'm managing a really good pass. No. I was the editor of a journal in Durham and someone did an article about this.
Mm-hmm.
And they researched it and I needed a photo of the article, so I just contacted her to see if I could use one of the ones from her social media, and obviously she said yes, but we just spoke about a little bit.
Oh, cool.
And she was like, thank you so much for covering it, and I was like, I'm in love with you. And that was that.
Aww, that's cool. Mm.
Me or you, given we both did that.
You go.
Okie doke.
Because mine's a long one.
I think mine's a long one too.
Oh, that's fun.
I think mine's my heftiest one.
Heftiest. Good word.
Chonky. So this is an article from a website called weeklyblitz.net, which I believe is an international news site, I guess. Their tagline is "Fears none but God," which I thought was a bit interesting. Mm. I should have looked into that more, but anyway, it looks like an interesting site. So it came out on January the 16th. It's by Niloy Gomez. So I don't know if you saw this, but the Bangladeshi parliament is going to have its first transgender MP.
What?
From the reserve quotas for the women.
That's so cool.
Which is so exciting. There's not actually an awful lot of information about this because I think it's just a fairly limited little political tweak. They mm-hmm. haven't actually got a transgender MP yet.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going to allow for that. So at the moment, 50 seats in Parliament are reserved for women, which I don't know the proportion of that. I should have checked that, actually. But as of now, the ruling party, the Awami League, will nominate 43 seats for women. The Jataya Party will seat 4. BNP, which I guess is the Bangladesh National Party. I was like, oh no, BNP.
They get everywhere.
Fucking hell, could you imagine? And independent coalitions will seat 2. But a source close to the Awami League has said, since the transgender community got official recognition in Bangladesh a couple of years back, this time the ruling party is going to allow at least one MP from the transgender community.
Yes, good.
So it's still one, but it's more than anyone. I don't know, this is a big claim. I think it's the first time I've read of anyone specifically recognising an openness, like, and an almost an invitation
mm-hmm.
for a transgender MP.
Yeah, just saying, like, this is a representation that we need to have in our government.
It is weird to put a quota on it.
Well, yeah,
it's
like
weird to say we're going to do it, but
affirmation?
Like, affirmative action?
Affirmative action, that is what I'm going for. It's been a while since I've done any education, so it's a miracle I can still read and write,
positive to be honest. Discrimination is what it's called.
Positive discrimination.
Yeah.
It's got its issues.
Mm.
It's contentious, but this is obviously a positive move.
Yeah.
I hope it'll bring in, it'll sort of open the door for other transgender people who want to get into politics.
Absolutely. So there's a bit more about the history of LGBT rights in Bangladesh that I thought was quite interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the LGBT history in Bangladesh is not quite as rosy. There's a section 377 of the Bangladesh Penal Code, which forbids anal or oral sex, regardless of the gender and sexual orientation of the participants.
Right, okay.
It states that whoever voluntarily has carnal intercourse against the order of nature with any man, woman, or animal, I like that they're all in the same category, shall be punished with imprisonment for life, or with imprisonment of either description for a term. That doesn't make sense. They'll be punished with imprisonment for life or something which may be 10 years and also be liable to a fine.
Right.
Penetration is sufficient to constitute the carnal intercourse necessary to the offence described in this section. And it actually does extend to any sexual union involving penile insertion. This article is worded horribly.
If you could see my face right now, it's like, just, like, I'm crying on the inside.
Penile insertion. Oh, I hate that. Even consensual heterosexual acts, such as fellatio and anal penetration, may be punishable under this law. In 2009 and 2013, the Bangladeshi parliament refused to overturn this section 377, and society continues not to recognise same-sex relationships. There's been a history of lesbian couples being arrested for marrying in secret. Another lesbian couple were arrested a few years ago. One of them was identified as the husband for having short hair. And the police took them to the station, gave them sex identification tests to prove that they were both women. And then they were prosecuted.
That's so degrading.
It is insanity. But I think basically the roundabout way this article was trying to get to this is that including a transgender person in policy making is hopefully gonna... It's an interesting jump to take. Most people, I think societies generally accept homosexuality before they accept the transgender community.
Mm.
It's an interesting jump to make. I'm not sure if there's a little bit more history research I need to do. There probably is. But going straight to openly accepting a transgender politician when society is still... It can't entirely be, obviously, but when the broader vibe of society seems to be quite homophobic,
mm-hmm.
it's an interesting development.
I think it's very positive of an example where a government is leading the way in human rights rather than people asking the government to sort it out.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see where the pressure came from.
Yeah. Since we brought up this issue of transgender representation, this might have been something that you've already seen, that the US Supreme Court have allowed Trump's transgender military ban.
I'm glad you're doing this because I saw the headlines and didn't read any of the articles.
It's incredibly depressing as a headline. And it's one that you're going to listen to this, you're not going to come away feeling good.
Mm.
But it's very, very important.
Yeah.
And this Supreme Court passing isn't the end of the road.
No.
I saw this in a few places like yourself, but I primarily got my research from New York Times in an article by Adam Liptak. The administration's policy reversed a 2016 decision by the Obama administration to open the military to transgender service members. It generally prohibits transgender people from military service, but makes exceptions for those already serving openly and for those willing to serve in their biological sex.
Oh, that's... Okay.
Yeah. It was a small step on the way to something hopefully greater that's now been reversed by Trump's administration, like so much good Obama was able to do.
Oh.
I know. Honey, you okay?
I miss him.
Me too. He's still there, but...
I was sorry, just quick. I was listening to the Two Dope Queens. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Two Dope Queens podcast. Oh, thank God.
You were looking at me then like, what are you talking about?
I was just like, where is this going? Yeah. I'm interested.
The Michelle Obama special.
Yes, I've been meaning to listen to.
I'm just even more obsessed with her than I was before. Aww. She's so fucking great. Oh, it's just really good. Anyway, carry on.
Definitely will listen now. So the vote to enact the ban was 5-4, with the Supreme's 5 conservative members in the majority, including Brett Kavanaugh, fucking dick, and the court's liberal justice, who I'm going to shout out because they have some morals, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Stephen Breyer all dissented.
Okay.
So the lawyers questioned the new policy and said, transgender people have been serving openly in all branches of the United States military since June 2016, including on active duty in combat zones. The government has presented no evidence that they're doing so harms military readiness, effectiveness, or lethality.
Okay.
So it's, from my reading, it was very much on ideological grounds. Obviously, what other grounds could there be?
Yeah.
And I believe we spoke previously about the law that was being proposed that transgender people had to prove their, like, genetic gender.
Yeah.
In order to be recognised as the gender of their, of who they are. Mm. So they've come out and said, yeah, they can enter the military if they can prove it by genetics, who they claim to be.
Yeah, okay, yeah,
like,
yeah,
in their very dismissive tone. On this... The slightly silver lining of this is that the policy has been granted a stay in California and Washington. So it will again go through the lower courts. However, during this time, the ban is still in action and it's most likely that transgender military personnel will be dismissed.
They will be dismissed?
Yeah.
How is that the silver lining?
Well, because in California and Washington, they said, so a stay has been granted, that means it's got to be like retrialed, like go back through all of the lower courts up to the Supreme Court if it gets there. if it's not beaten before getting there. It's very
politics.
No, who would study even, that? It's not even politics, though, is it? It's like judiciary, which is just even more of a head fuck. That's as far as it's got at the minute.
Okay,
is it two it's states?
One to watch. Like we say about fucking everything we talk about, but it's one to watch.
Yeah.
I don't even know where to watch Trump anymore.
Like, I read this and I was like, I don't want to talk about Trump, but this isn't about Trump. This is about real people.
Yeah, exactly.
And okay, you might think, well, how many like transgender military personnel can there be in the US? But it's a wider conversation, yeah, exactly. And it's going to just be a slippery slope.
Start closing more doors for people.
Mm-hmm. Who's to say, like, they stop transgender people entering the military, and then what's going to be next? Like, openly homosexual people, people with liberal values, like atheists.
Yeah.
Where does it stop?
Mm.
Maybe that's too extreme, my opinion, but that's how I feel.
I do
about
always
it.
Find, I mean, if I find it difficult to engage with, not difficult to engage with, but I'm kind of quite pacifist generally. Mm. So it's not like issues with the military are not something that I would initially jump on or care about, but when it's about, it's just the same with anything. Like, I'm not religious, but I think everyone should have the right to marry in a church if they want to, regardless of who they're marrying. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just one of those things where if someone has the rights, then everyone should have them. Like, yeah. Well, that's fucking great.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I'd say thank you, but I don't want to.
No, I don't want to. I don't want a thank you.
Okay. I think the rest of mine are positive.
That's fabulous.
They're all quite... I mean, I'm clearly needing a bit of positivity in my life, because everything I've chosen is, like, so jolly.
Wow, yeah.
But there's one that... It's a bit of a... I don't know if you could say a fluff piece in inverted commas that I read on a website called Autostraddle, but it's not, because it's so well written. Basically, I read the headline, and I only clicked on the article because this is something that I kind of decided I want to do a few years ago, and like it's just changed my mentality. But mentality.
Mentality?
Yeah, so it's changed my mentality enormously. The headline for the article is called "Your Homework for 2019 is to Assume Everyone Thinks You're Hot." I'm serious.
Oh, yeah.
And I started doing this a few years ago. Basically, I think I must have said it to you before, but at some point, I don't know if it was a conscious decision or I don't know, it happened gradually. It definitely happened gradually. But I kind of realised some people are going to think you're hot regardless of what you look like.
Mm.
Some people aren't ever, ever, regardless of what you look like. You will never be hot enough for them. Just imagine you're attractive to everyone, because it just works out better for you. What's the harm in thinking you're attractive? Like, and confidence is attractive anyway. So basically, it's an article about this. So it's by a writer who is on this website, just called Vanessa. I'm going to link her other work in the socials.
Cool.
She starts the article by saying that she gets asked this question from a lot of what she describes as very hot friends. An example of one of the messages is, "Hi, Vanessa," I imagine. But it says, "I have been single now for about 2 months and I want to get back into dating and I've been feeling incredibly frisky. Do you have any good links or advice? You are so naturally sexy and I want to be like that, but it's just feeling so awkward. I've started taking some thirst traps, which I feel is a good start. Here's to sexy times ahead. Sorry if this is a strange question." Did you know what thirst traps was, by the way?
Not a clue.
Yeah, I was reading this. They mentioned it a few times. I was like, what the fuck are we talking about here? I'm so, like, young and old at the same time.
It's basically... We're just very British.
Yeah. I think it's, like, posting sexy pictures to, like...
Oh, I get it.
To, like, catch someone's eye. I guess. Okay. Thirst traps. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. But she's basically saying about how she actually, this woman gets this question quite a lot. And she says she thinks it's because she seems confident, she has a huge mouth, she loves talking about going on dates and having sex, and she posts a lot of NSFW photos of my tits on my very public Instagram, she says.
Wow.
Basically, the point she's raising is that it's nothing to do with appearance. It is obviously all about confidence, and that's nothing new. So she talks about how Her friends always seem surprised to learn that she doesn't wake up every day just sort of naturally, magically loving herself. And well, she puts it as, lol, I live in the same fucked up world as you.
Mm.
Like, it's something you have to train, and it's something, it's a skill you develop. She gives a few tips, and like, this isn't like the most groundbreaking article in the world, but I just like the idea of it, because I've never seen anyone else say it before, and I've always thought it, and people always think I'm, I don't know, I've said it to people before and I'm really drunk and it always just comes out really twatty, because I'm like, I decided I'm hot, and then they're like, can you elaborate? No, I'm just hot.
Oh, I think for me, like about a year ago, I went through a similar thing, and I just started to be like, yeah, I look fucking good. And I'd say it like in front of my friends that were getting ready, I'd be like, oh yes, we are done, there is nothing more to do, let's go. And my one friend Sarah, she's of a very similar mindset. And she's just like, oh my God, I love this person that you are right now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where it's come from or why, but keep going with it.
Yeah.
So that was really good, actually, to have someone just be like, yes.
You may have just revealed point two or three out of her tips. I don't know which, because I've messed up the order of the numbers. That was one of her tips I didn't actually include, but it was about surrounding yourself with people that aren't going to, you know, like when you do that and you're like, damn, I look good. You don't want people that are going to raise an eyebrow, because some people do that and it's no one's fault. It's just we're not taught that that's an okay thing to do. So you need to be surrounding yourself with people that are like, yeah, you do.
Yeah, like, exactly.
So she says the first step to deciding you're hot is deciding you're hot, which it is all oversimplified, but you do. You just have to. It's kind of part conscious and learning and part just deciding. Like, it doesn't matter whether I am or not, so I may as well just say that I am.
Yeah.
And the more that you say it, the more that you'll believe it. Again, the thirst traps thing. Take thirst traps or show off your confidence in another way. She talks about taking pictures that make you feel good about your body.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of hark back to the last episode with the Are You Nearly Bare Yet account. That's a good one for that. She talks about how confidence is a muscle. You've got to, like, you'll strengthen it the more you use it. And also there's that stigma about, I think it's kind of fading out, but I definitely had it in school and sixth form, that some people think it's, like, not cool and embarrassing or egotistical to take and post selfies. I'm not sure if we might have spoken about this before.
I don't think so.
But basically this article also talks about how we're all human and external validation is in some ways an addictive drug, but it also can really work, and if you can manipulate it to work in your way and it's not the driving force behind your life, it's just something that you can switch on and off when you want, it's a very useful tool, which is kind of like what posting pictures online is. You if you need it, you post. If you don't need it, just ignore it, and then don't spend your whole life waiting for the likes. Like,
there is definitely a fine line to be walked there, because obviously when we post things online and we get likes and comments and et cetera, it's a rush of dopamine.
Yeah.
We get this sense of validation and it feels really good, but it is short-lived. So
yeah,
I think putting other things into practice that make you feel good about yourself are vital to go alongside that.
Yeah.
I've never heard of thirst traps before, but one thing I do is I'll take nice pictures of myself, maybe in some gym gear or some new underwear, just for me. Like, I don't send it to anyone. I just, like, have it on my phone. I'm like, that's what I look like. I take
so many selfies and don't post them.
Yeah.
It's just like when I've done good makeup.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I need to capture this moment of hotness.
Yeah. Or I send them to my friends sometimes. I've done it before. I've sent, like, or at uni, I just used to walk into my housemate's room in underwear and be like, look.
Look at me, I'm a goddess I among made this. People. There was shimmying happening then, you couldn't see it.
They once were, my housemates were once going to, like, potentially pay me to go out in a full fishnet outfit, because I had, like, this fishnet top and fishnet tights and just, like, this tiny black skirt that may as well have not been there. And I put it on as a joke. And then they were just like, oh my God, go out like this. I so would have done, but I'm really glad I didn't.
Yeah.
I looked at pictures of myself in that top recently, and I was with someone and they were like, can you see your nipple? And I was like, I don't know, I don't think so. Yep, no, I can. Like, very, very clearly. Just never noticed that before. I was like, I wonder why that picture got so many likes.
Yeah, yeah, that was probably something to do with it.
Yeah, anyway.
Anyway.
The merits of the thirst trap, I think that's what I'm going to take away from that.
Mm.
I still don't know what they are, but I'm assuming they're good. Have you got any more? I've got a couple. Do you need me to?
I have plenty more.
Okay.
So, someone who preaches body positivity and we love.
I don't, and that we've never gone an episode without mentioning,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Tony Blair.
Could you imagine?
Body positivity.
Just like one, the next day it's just like a billboard of him in his undies. This like, is what real men look like.
Real men have a beer belly.
Oh, but they do.
I know. But don't yes. you? Oh, God. No, what she's getting at is Jamila Jamil.
Yes, I am.
Not Tony.
Very different. I wasn't expecting that as an answer.
I don't know where that came from. I was like, think of someone funny. And then, okay, Tony Blair.
Oh, your references.
They're amazing. I'm living in a different era.
Potentially.
I think I stopped taking information in 2009, truly.
So, Avon.
I saw this.
Have pulled their body shaming ad. Thanks to Jamila Jamil's tweets. I got this article on bust.com.
Bust.
Bust.
New fave. I like Bust.
Yep. So, Jamila Jamil criticised the beauty company Avon for body shaming women with their most recent marketing scheme, which poorly promoted a naked proof product that supposedly combats cellulite.
Nothing fucking does.
We should get into a conversation about cellulite at some point. And this actually goes back to December 2018, when Jamila Jamil wrote the following in a BBC essay on why she believes airbrushing should be illegal. It's anti-feminist. It is ageist. It is fat-phobic. It looks weird. It looks wrong. It's robbing you of your time, money, comfort, integrity, and self-worth. We need to see spots. We need to see wrinkles. We need to see cellulite and stretch marks. If not, we will become almost allergic to the sight of them. Even though we all have these things on our bodies, don't give your money to any institution that sells you the lie of perfection. They are trying to break you. So you will hate yourself and go out and buy something you don't need in order to fix something that was never broken in the first place.
Jamila for Prime Minister.
Yeah. Only if I could be so eloquent.
I love her so much. This is an essay though. She wrote this. It wasn't just spoken word. You could have come up with that.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate the belief. I actually have printed out the advert. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
This. So there is a woman having a lovely time in her...
She's laughing at the ceiling.
In her... Like, there is actually nothing wrong with this image of the woman, apart from the fact it's heavily airbrushed.
Yeah.
And across the image it says, dimples are cute on your face, in brackets, not on your thighs.
I don't understand what... When they think we're living, like, it's just so off the mark of what society is going for at the moment. Like, it's not new to... like we started giving up on airbrushing on high street shops a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. It still readily exists and in lots of different kinds of media. Have you ever watched the Try Guys on YouTube?
Don't get me started.
No, well they did a good one about
about
airbrushing and changing bodies.
Yeah,
they did one both as according to male and women beauty standards. So that was quite interesting.
They have done some good shit. I just really fundamentally disagree with the fact that the Try Guys on BuzzFeed, I know they're not BuzzFeed anymore, but they got to do just a varied range of fun shit, and then the female equivalent Ladylike.
Mm.
It's all beauty and clothes. And
yeah.
It's with a slant towards body positivity, but like, why can't they just go and fucking... I don't know what they've done. Race some cars around a track or something. Do you know what I'm... It just pissed me off. But anyway, irrelevant.
No, you're raising a good point. I'm sure we'll come back to it.
Yeah.
I mean, cellulite as a word infuriates me because it was invented in the mid-1800s by two French scientists.
Of course they're fucking French.
Who were, I think they were hired by a beauty company.
Really?
Yeah, to come up with a word for this thing that there was not a word for before.
Yeah.
Cellulitis was a thing, but cellulitis is a medical condition.
Mm.
So they connect, they were like, well, it's kind of the same.
Oh.
Let's just call it that.
Yeah.
And then the word was adopted by Vogue in the 60s, 1960s. I think it was 1967, maybe.
Ooh, big clothes.
And like spread on a headline on their front cover, like how to get rid of cellulite, how to cope with cellulite, blah, blah, blah.
Ugh.
And from then on, it's become an obsession.
It's so distressing. Like, I worried about it the most when I was about fucking 15, I think, when it was probably just like stretch marks or something.
Mm.
It's so toxic.
It's just ridiculous, and I think we're taught to be embarrassed about it, or we're taught that it's unhealthy.
Mm.
Everyone's different, and for a lot of people, it's genetics.
Mm.
You've got to live with it, and there are plenty of people that I think it's like an attractive thing to have. Exactly. Who love some dimples.
Yeah.
Who love stretch marks. There are plenty of people who've been brainwashed the other way, and you need to teach them different.
Mm. Yeah, Avon. They're cute on your face and on your thighs.
Exactly.
Dimple all over the fucking place.
Can only dream.
I did a nod as I said that. I was like,
you did.
Dimple.
It's like whipped your little pony.
Yeah, right. And that was just another story of Jameela Jamil for president. Like,
yeah, just, for sure.
Did you see her Instagram today? She posted a little video of her on the Conan show, I think.
No.
When she said she found out like 5 minutes before they were going on the show that the filming was going to be on like high stools, and she was wearing a dress. So she was like, shit, I'm going to be flashing everyone. So she put some little shorts on underneath, and then it's like a funny post she put on where she's just like shuffling into the chair, and the whole time she's just got this look on her face like, eek, because she's like trying to like sit in a way where she's not flashing.
No.
But it's so funny. I just love her so much.
I love her too.
I want a framed picture of her in our new flat.
We should.
I might paint one.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure she'd like that.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on from the collective love of our lives. Have you done a hashtag 10-year thingy, Hannah?
Absolutely not.
Okay, good. Me neither. Because I was going to open this with, basically, here is a hashtag 10-year challenge that is actually quite interesting.
Okay.
As opposed to just people... I don't care what, like, your hair is a different colour. Well done.
No, I pretty much look the same. 10 years has not done much.
How old was I, 12? I don't know. I look like a 12-year-old.
I was 15. I looked fine.
Yeah, it was just, I was a child. But anyway, on a slightly more interesting note, an article on BBC News, Hitting the Big Dogs,
mm-hmm.
by Kagil Kasaboglu, about women in Turkey using the 10-year challenge to talk about the changing policy around the Islamic headscarf over the last 10 years in Turkey. Basically, the idea behind it was women who had, at some point over the last 10 years, chosen to stop wearing their headscarf, and they were using the hashtag to explain their reasons why. So wearing the headscarf has always been controversial. Wearing headscarves in public institutions was banned for years, and students were not allowed to go to university with their headscarves. So they've always had a law one way or the another. It was never just do what you want. But over the past decade, under President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the ban has gradually been lifted. Secularists see the headscarf as a symbol of politics and religious conservatism, and accuse Mr. Erdogan's ban of pushing a religious agenda. There's pressure on some women to wear headscarves from strict Muslim parents, and also some aspects of society in Turkey pressure people to wearing it. But in using the hashtag in this way, Turkish women have had a way to share their stories about the reasons why they're taking off their headscarves. The messages that are being retweeted on Twitter have been picked up by an online platform called You'll Never Walk Alone, which encourages Turkish women who took off their headscarves or are thinking about doing so to share their stories as well. the founder of this website told the BBC in Turkey, like anonymously, that the aim was to show Turkish women that they are not alone and that they are in solidarity with those women in their difficult journey. Nobody at 13 to 14 years old should be forced to wear something they'll have to put on for the rest of their lives. If you scroll through the hashtags on this social media, some of them say 1 year challenge because they've adopted it over the last year. I think that's quite a popular one, the hashtag 1 year challenge.
Okay.
But if you scroll through the Turkish hashtags of this, there's just loads and loads of pictures of women before and after wearing their headscarves. There was one that I saw that was really just powerful. Was a woman, a portrait of a woman wearing a headscarf, and then afterwards a picture of her without wearing the headscarf, and I think she's like paragliding or something.
Okay.
And she's just like, this to me is the biggest symbol of my freedom and taking back my own life. Another of the hashtags says, we are purified from any kind of dogmas the religion could ever impose on a woman. We did not play the role others have assigned for us. We have become ourselves. Hashtag 10-year challenge.
Cool.
Just a bit more interesting than the ones that I've seen on my newsfeed. So.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah. How are you? Have you got any more? Me?
I do have one more.
Okay.
So I think the biggest national day, I think it might be an international day that's happened in the past fortnight, is Blue Monday.
Yeah.
If you're not aware of what Blue Monday is, it's a name given to a day in January, typically the third Monday of the month, claimed to be the most depressing day of the year. It's kind of interesting to know that the concept was first publicised as part of a 2015 press release from the holiday company Sky Travel.
What?
Which claimed to have calculated the date using an equation.
An equation?
An equation.
Not an equation. They know everything.
It takes into account weather conditions, and this only applies to the Northern Hemisphere.
Of course it fucking does.
The idea was considered pseudoscience.
And no shit.
Yeah. The formula that they used has been said by actual scientists, not Sky Travel, as nonsensical.
No shit.
However, what this day does do is raise awareness of mental health, especially of depression and seasonal affective disorder, which is the kind of depression that occurs in the colder months of the year when there's less sunlight and the daylight hours are shorter, which does have a real effect on people and should not be undervalued. Obviously, as people may or may not know, I work in music, so that's where this is the angle I'm going to take on Blue Monday. One place where we find both the problem and solution for mental health issues like depression is within music. It's widely known that creative types, such as musicians, often suffer with mental health crises in their lifetime. But music has also been reported as a great help to those who are in a dark place. So you've got this kind of, it's a paradox.
Double-edged sword.
Yeah, it really is. I really love this quote by acclaimed feminist Maya Angelou, who once wrote, "Music was my refuge. I could crawl into the space between the notes and curl my back to loneliness."
She's just, oh, I love her.
So this leads on into an article on The Independent by Roisin O'Connor. So Roisin has lots of interesting statistics that bring weight to this argument. In the 21st century, research suggests there is a connection between music and its effects on various illnesses. Studies have shown it to slow heart rate, lower blood pressure, and reduce levels of stress hormones. Research conducted in 2005 by the University of Windsor in Canada, meanwhile, showed that music could improve cognitive function.
Yep.
Music is good for you.
Yeah.
That is a fact.
I don't think anyone can disagree with that.
However, there is still a serious discussion we need to have about mental health in the music industry. Back in 2014, a survey published by Help Musicians, which is a leading independent UK music charity, found that 60% of musicians had struggled with their mental health, whereas the overall figure in the UK is 25%. In that same study, 68% said they struggled with loneliness or separation from family and friends, and a staggering 75% of musicians said they had experienced performance anxiety. So obviously Blue Monday is a great way to raise awareness and remind those who use social media of these findings and these statistics, which I very much doubt have changed in the last 5 years. Another article I came across on Blue Monday was by Hayley Scott over on Clash magazine. This is more of a listener's perspective to music, and in the article she shares her personal battles with depression and the way that music has helped her with that. She shares that she's made whole playlists for when she's feeling especially down, or how some songs are impossible to listen to when you're feeling overwhelmed, and even how music brought her together with her best friend, which is incredibly sweet, and I can imagine a lot of people can relate to this article. The whole piece is beautiful start to finish, really eloquent, and, you know, raises a cynical eyebrow towards the idea of Blue Monday. However, you know, very much have the same opinion that awareness is good, whatever form it comes in, whether that's a hashtag or not. I'm going to read the final closing statement from the article, which reflects Maya Angelou's opinion of music as well. As a music journalist, it's my job to be analytical and pick things apart. Writing about music acts as a distraction from my own depression, but listening to it without an agenda is what really heals me. There are even moments when it can change your perspective on everything without ever really realising it. It's a sentimental trope, but as long as you have your favourite music, you'll never truly feel alone. That's it, really. I can't do any better than that.
Musicians. I pay for my music.
That's great. So what have you got for us next?
An artist called Shelby Lawman, who, and I quote from the article, which is from Jezebel, she gives dudes their due by drawing medals, trophies and laurel leaves, recognizing men for doing the bare minimum. It's so fucking good.
Oh my god.
Like I say, it's best if you, it would be best like to go and get the vibe of it yourself. So in the interview she said to Jezebel, it's basically just a reflection on how everyone besides cis men is held to such an impossibly high standard. It's really funny, it's very tongue-in-cheek. She says, I've seen the same one on the post, like, this is, it's comedy, it's not, it's like, basically stop taking it so fucking personally, because she gets so many messages from men. Like,
right.
I don't think she particularly cares, but anyway, an example of one is, I'm not going to describe many because they don't translate into words too well, it's just the general visual effect.
Okay.
But it's a picture of like a rosette, like a, what would you describe that as?
Oh, I think it would be a rosette.
Yeah.
Like an awards badge.
It's an award. It's an award. Yeah. And on the award, it says in big capital letters, responded to your text! Exclamation mark. A cool 7 months later to let you know he's playing a gig tonight. So one of these awards says on it, you've got to imagine she's giving it to a man. You've got to imagine a man wearing this award.
Okay.
Okay.
Any man?
A good boy.
A good boy.
Okay, it says on it, it's super supportive of your success, in smaller font. Unless he thinks about it too hard, in which case he evaporates into thin air. Another one. Lets you pay for everything because he's secure in his masculinity, and then in small font, and financially insecure. I just love it. There's so many, and it's so funny. And half the fun of it is that she also posts the messages that she gets on the account, because they are fucking gold. Like, some of the things the men message in, like, they just don't get it. Men do not get it. They think it's real, or they think it's really malicious. And she just screenshots some of them sometimes, or, like, they message in, like, how can I be a good boy? It's so fucking funny.
Wow.
It's good. Go follow it. She's got a book coming out as well.
Oh, right, okay. Good, good, cool. I follow this Instagram account called Be Me Up Soft Boy.
Oh my god, I'm obsessed.
Do you
I'm
love obsessed. It?
I love it. It's so many men. It's like, I've spoken to all of them.
Yeah, same. Just before I recently quit dating apps.
Yeah, big move.
Yeah, I know, right. Well, I do. It's a cycle.
Oh god,
just
yeah.
Part of my natural life cycle,
it's
I think,
everyone.
At this minute. Yeah, anywho. So my most recent delete of the apps, this guy was like, was trying to like connect with me in some way, and I was like, I mean, I'm just too good, so it's fine, whatever. And he messaged back like, "Ooh, big-headed one we have here," in brackets, Yoda voice.
Oh.
And I was like, no, I'm just confident. Unmatch. Delete.
Yeah.
And that was like, right, okay, this is the kind of people that are on these apps. I do need to get off here now.
I wish I could remember or had screenshotted some of my Tinder conversations. Because I went through a phase of just being really fucking dickish in my replies when people said stuff. And honestly, I was getting funny, Hannah. I was getting funny.
You were getting funny.
I was getting funny.
You're probably winning some hearts.
Oh, God.
And breaking some.
I don't think so.
No?
Well, I always used to get ones that, like, you look really cute, but I bet you've got a kinky side, like, all the time.
Really?
All the time. Yeah, like, you're definitely one of those cute but kinky types. It's like, fuck off. It's true, but fuck off.
No, very presumptuous.
I hated it.
How can they see this?
Yeah, I always get cute. One, I fucking hate the word cute. I'm not a rabbit.
I get cute a lot.
I like cute from friends as, like, a person that, I don't know. It depends. Sometimes it makes me want to rip your head off, and sometimes I'm like, oh, I am cute. Look at me. I'm adorable. But yeah. Mm-hmm. I forgot what we're talking about.
Me too. Have you got any more current news bits?
I think that was it. That was my little palate cleanser.
Nice. Yeah, I appreciate the game. That.
Yeah.
My new Insta obsession, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I've also done all my current news.
Cool. That means we have something else to do.
It means badass moment from history time.
Badass moment from history.
Ooh, we went a bit musical there.
We did.
Okay, we already sang badass moment from history.
Bore for her.
We're not doing... This is not going to take off.
Yeah, it is.
What is it?
Bore for her.
It's not.
B-A-W, badass woman, bore for her from history. It could be bow for her, but that's just stupid.
Bore
for her.
Oh,
bore for her.
Just stop.
Bore for her.
It's not going to take off.
It will if I say it enough.
Nope.
Okay, fine.
I'm pulling a Regina George. It's not going to catch on.
Still
going
to say it.
All right. So, badass woman from history time. The best part of anyone's day.
Oh, yeah.
Discovering their new favourite lady from the histoires.
Oh, my God. That doesn't really make sense.
Oh, yeah. Fucking with the languages. Like the good English girl I am.
Cool.
Yep.
Good work.
All right. Okay, I've got a cute little backstory for this woman. So for Christmas, I bought my little five-year-old sister a book called Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls by Francesca Cavallo.
Is it the one with the podcast?
Yes, it is.
There is also a podcast. Yeah.
And a book came out. And because I'm trying to get my little sister both into reading and more into a diverse range of identities rather than the pink unicorn glitter version of herself. That's cool. Not to put that down, but I think...
She could be open to more,
for sure. So I bought this book, thinking, you know, we'll read it at night and stuff. Or someone else in the family will. And the first story in Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls is Ada Lovelace. So I read it to my little sister. Each one is just like a page, and on the other side they have a beautiful illustration of the woman from history. And at the end... I was like, so do you understand what this is about? Without Ada Lovelace, there would be no laptops. There would be no phones. There'd be no tablets. My little technology-obsessed sister looked up at me with these big eyes like, no. Oh, no. And she just gave me this big grin and said, Ada Lovelace is the best.
Aww.
I know.
She's so cute.
It was very cute. And
Grace is just so good at the wholesome, like,
oh, she turns it on. Yeah.
I know. She knows what she's doing, but I don't care. I'm like, just keep saying it. It's so cute, Grace.
She is adorable. So, if you are anything like Grace, and you are not sure how on earth did we get to this point in our technology, this is where it all starts.
We're going to have so many beautiful eyes looking up at us after they hear this.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Because you listen with your eyes.
But they'll be looking up as they're listening, like, I'm learning.
Looking up at what, the ceiling?
Yeah, I don't know, I don't care, they're just going to be looking up.
We're not up there, guys.
Oh, God. Down there, if anything.
Okay, here we go.
We're going.
Ada Lovelace has been called the world's first computer programmer. What she did was write the world's first machine algorithm for an early computing machine that existed only on paper. Of course, someone had to be the first, but Lovelace was a woman, and this was the 1840s. Lovelace was a brilliant mathematician, thanks in part to opportunities that were denied most women of the time.
Mm-hmm. Always the way.
So, let's go back to the start. Ada Byron was a teenager when she met Cambridge mathematics professor Charles Babbage.
Babbage.
The contrast of names. Charles Babbage. Who had invented the difference engine, a mechanical computer designed to produce mathematical tables automatically and error-free. Babbage never built the actual machine due to the personal setbacks and financing difficulty. By 1834, he had moved on to design his analytical engine, the first general-purpose computer, which used punch cards for input and output. This machine also lacked financing and was never built.
Oh, honey.
Hello.
Apply sometimes, for some of them grants.
Sometimes being a white man just isn't enough.
I thought you were just born with funding then.
However, Babbage's difference engine was finally constructed in 1985. And that apparently took it up until 2002 to complete, and it worked.
What?
So his maths was good.
Yeah. He just didn't have the money.
Bless him. Babbage was impressed with the brilliant young woman, Ada Byron. They corresponded for years discussing math and computing as he developed the analytical engine. In 1842, Babbage gave a lecture on the engine at the University of Turin. Luigi Menabrea, a mathematician and future Italian Prime Minister.
Oh, no biggie.
Yeah, I know. Transcribed the lecture in French. All right, mate, show off.
No one fucking asked you to do that.
Ada, now in her late 20s and known as Countess of Lovelace.
Countess of Lovelace?
Countess of Lovelace.
Fucking hell.
What a glorious title.
That sounds like my dad wrote a porno name. We're in the wrong podcast.
And the Countess of Lovelace. Let's not do it, no.
Blinked.
I retreat. Retreat.
The Countess of Lovelace blinked.
Her bra came off.
Belinda.
Belinda, and her breast plunged forward. Don't do us in for copyright.
Oh,
please.
So funny.
Oh, okay. So good. If you haven't listened to My Dad Wrote a Porno, please do.
That's what we're talking
for yourself,
about. Please
for anyone
don't.
Else. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Let's go back.
I can't calm down.
I'm feeling all hot and steamy.
Oh, God.
Okay, Ada, now in her late 20s and known as Countess of Lovelace, was commissioned to I'm going to skip that bit.
I'll be okay. All this
right.
time I'll
she
be...
So Ada was commissioned to translate the transcript into English. Lovelace added her own notes to the lecture, which ended up being three times as long as the actual transcript. It was published in 1843.
You always hate that person in the lecture, don't you?
Yeah.
Making all the notes.
I mean, I was that person.
Were you? Mm. Oh, I don't make notes.
Massive nerd.
I don't make notes.
Ada Lovelace's notes made it clear that she understood the analytical engine as well as Babbage himself, and furthermore, she understood how to make it do the things computers do. She said, that's more than me.
Yeah.
She suggested the data input that would program the machine to calculate Bernoulli numbers, which was now considered the first computer program. But more than that, Lovelace was a visionary. She understood that numbers could be used to represent more than just quantities, and a machine that could manipulate numbers could be made to manipulate any data represented by numbers. She predicted that machines like the analytical engine could be used to compose music, produce graphics, and be useful to science.
Good prediction.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
very on point. Well done. Babbage was so impressed with Lovelace's contributions, he dubbed her the... Okay, we might get a bit porny again.
Oh my god, I can't
the
wait.
Enchantress of Numbers.
Fucking hell. The Enchantress of Numbers entered the room. Belinda could feel her nipples begin to harden.
The Enchantress of Numbers.
Why is that the song you sing? Is that the sexiest song you can think of?
Yeah, it is.
Oh my god, you would say my references are bad.
sorry. I'm old inside. So the question is, how did a young woman get the opportunity to show the world her talents in the 19th century?
Yep.
Twitter. She
programmed Twitter.
Well, without her, there would be no Twitter. Yeah. Where would our purpose in life be then?
I would not know what to do. I'd be walking around hashtagging in real life. Like, I don't do that anyway.
Just shouting at people.
Hashtag! 10-year challenge! What are you talking about?
Okay, so mathematical intelligence was not the only thing that Ada Lovelace had going for her. Her potential for intelligence probably came genetically, as she was the daughter of the poet Lord Byron. If you're wondering if there was any connection there. And his first wife, Anne Isabella Noel Byron. Both were privileged members of the aristocracy, and both were gifted and well-educated. The marriage did, however, break up shortly after Ada was born. Lady Byron, so Ada's mother, who studied literature, science, philosophy, and most unusually for a woman of the time, mathematics, was determined that Ada would not follow in her father's footsteps. Yeah, it's a strong mother's. Instead of art and literature, Ada was tutored in mathematics and science. Ada excelled in all her studies, and her interests were wide-ranging. Ada became a baroness in 1835 when she married William King, 8th Baron King.
Whatever that means.
The two had three children. In 1838, she became Countess of Lovelace when her husband was elevated to Earl of Lovelace. Her pedigree and peerage alone would have landed Lovelace in the history books, but her accomplishments in mathematics made her a pioneer of not only computing, but of women in science.
Sick. I like it when people have privilege and use it for good.
She was very academically involved.
Yeah.
So it's not whether it was like for good or not for good. It was like for science, for maths. Yes.
But for like, I don't know, it'd be easy to have wealth and status and just be like, okay, I'll do nothing.
Mm. There's a lot to be said for her mother here.
Yeah.
Who was like, my daughter's going to have the best education possible.
I love it. Oh, mothers.
Parents, and like we've seen it both with like fathers and mothers,
yeah, it's
and
true.
Any relatives who encourage their like the younger people in their family,
yeah,
it has like amazing effects. So yeah, keep that in mind if you ever decide to procreate, or if you have children, just you know, do that.
Try it with your cats too. Maybe to the not the same effect, but
and your dogs and your turtles just and your cats. And your pigeons.
I've come to the realization recently that I am unashamedly a cat person. I kind of knew anyway, but I thought dogs were in there, and I just looked at a dog the other day and I was like, do you know what, you're not a cat.
I love all animals,
but I like cats the best, and narwhals. But anyway,
this is a tangent. Yeah. Okay, so although Ada Lovelace had this huge impact on the world of mathematics and computing, her life was short-lived, and she died of cancer in 1852 at the age of only 36.
Oh no.
Yeah. More than 150 years later, we remember her contributions to science and engineering in the celebration of Ada Lovelace Day on October 13th.
Put it in the diary.
Mm-hmm. First celebrated in 2009, it's a day set aside to learn about women in science, technology, engineering and mathematics.
That's a good one.
It's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah. I didn't know anything about her. I knew the name. But like I said over dinner before, I thought it was a Sherlock Holmes character. It just sounds like a Sherlock
Holmes. It just, her name is like so like fanciful.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't sound like she would be a real person, never mind a mathematician. Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant. She's brilliant. Thank you, Hannah.
You're welcome. Right.
Okay.
Done.
I think we're done. So, as partially promised, I think that was a relatively ramble-free episode.
Mm-hmm.
Only a few tangents.
Yep.
Just a few. So that is that for this episode.
Yeah, episode number 7.
Seven,
if you could believe it.
Okay.
To close out this episode, we've got another song for you.
Brilliant.
This time comes from Matilda Eyre, who made our wonderful introductory song.
Yes, Matilda.
This is one of her own singles, released last year, and it's called The Calling, and it's kind of all about following your dreams.
Brilliant. Pretty relevant.
Yep.
Cool. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy the song.
Nina, do you want to plug our socials real quick?
Oh, yeah, plug. Okay, so please follow us on Twitter at That's What She Pod, on Facebook at That's What She Said Podcast, and on Instagram, That's What She Said _ podcast.
Wicked.
Enjoy the song.
Bye.
Bye.
Now they're calling.